Well, my artist name is Zeitwarp, but my real name is Dan Quill, and I'm here to display one of my pieces at Computala. And, you know, it's nice to be invited to come and show something, and it's basically a 7-foot-high installation called Do Androids Dream of Electric Noise, number 9. And you can't miss it when you come in, because it's the big blue figure sitting on top of a pair of Bang & Olufsen tuners from the 1970s in the corner.
With a keyboard.
The keyboard, yeah. I mean, you know, how into music is everyone? Remake, remodel is kind of an overarching philosophy of my work. And the idea is that everything is a salvaged or recycled, repurposed or remixed piece. So everything in the installation is something that either I owned, it was in my studio, or was in my family possession, or something I've come across. And the keyboard was actually a home electronic keyboard from, I think, the 70s. It's a Goodwin keyboard, sort of thing that you can, you know, find anywhere now on eBay for almost no money, or wherever you find your salvaged audio equipment. And we harvested the parts out of it to use. My son's a jazz musician, experimental musician. We took the reverb out of it. We took the I'm trying to think what it's called. The rotating speaker. We took that out of it. And I kept the keyboards. I thought, I'm going to do something one of these days with them. And I basically just chopped it up, took the bits out that I wanted, and that's actually a keyboard that was in my family's possession for 20 or 30 years. And it's now sitting in LCB Depot as part of this exhibition, sitting on top of the kind of Android, the cyberpunk Android Ozymandias Prometheus figure that's in the corner of the room.
So it's very visual. Is there an audio component to it?
There actually isn't this time. Most of my work has always been kind of like multi-form. So there'll be digital. There's a digital element to it, which is not here. There's a there's always an immersive part of it, some sort of augmented reality activation. And sound art has always been a real feature, but actually in this piece, no, there isn't. I mean, in all the other sort of Do Androids series, it's been focused around music. This is actually a commentary really about human music or human culture in the machine age, or the kind of Promethean tension between culture and humanity and technology. And it's actually just what you can see there, although there is some lighting underneath, but that doesn't really count.
If I said it was quite up front, yeah. And it doesn't seem to have hidden, does it have a subtext?
My work is post-conceptual. And what I mean by that, I'm trying to hit you over the head and make a point. Or rather, that's not entirely true. I'm not trying to force you to accept my point. I'm trying to invite people to consider certain things. The background to the series is that I was in Lisbon in 2022, giving a presentation at a tech conference about generative AI. And this was 2 months before ChatGPT had landed, and it was what I sometimes refer to as the summer of DALL-E 2. And everybody who had access was kind of generating images as they continue to do now. And it seemed that there was some kind of big moment was about to happen where generative AI was going to launch upon an unsuspecting human cultural landscape. And, I was joking with somebody. We were on a panel talking about future music, and I was reminded of how, Facebook had run these experiments with chatbots that had stopped, they shut it down because they started conversing in a language that was more convenient to them. And Terry Matthew at Five Mag had published an article sort of saying something like the future of streamonomics will be bot listeners listening to generative AI music, and the only human interaction will be your monthly subscription fee, which I thought was a great comment. And someone asked me about the future of streaming, and I said something like, well, I guess what I'm thinking is, and the question ultimately is, do androids dream of electric noise? Which is obviously a jokey reference to the Philip K. Dick novel that inspired Blade Runner. But the key to it for me was, why make human audible music if it's basically going to be produced by bots for and listened by bots? or produced by generative AI and listened to by bots, they don't actually need to make human audible music, you know, anymore. I mean, you know, and so it was a throwaway comment, but then it was became the kind of first line in a, I was working on something called Homo Trans Retro at the time, which again for another exhibition in Lisbon, and it became the first time that I was thinking about displacement and, you know, human displacement, cultural displacement, and the idea that the kind of science fiction dystopia of the AI singularity was always held as this kind of thing that was going to happen to humanity. And, you know, it's a genuine threat, you know, but the trick is you have to lean into your humanity, whether that's your uniqueness or your ingenuity. And you have to make yourself, you know, unfortunately, you can either play the attention trade or you have to make yourself into this kind of more human version of yourself that is important to other humans, in my view. But really, I want people to consider the fact that they have agency in the present over what happens in the future, their own agency. And, you know, without getting into the kind of like sci-fi tropes, the future is unwritten. But it's a commentary on people hang on to the past. I think there's been a real sense of kind of like the you know, this kind of safe play space of reminiscence and nostalgia. And at the same time, we have this dystopian view of the future that, you know, the enshittification, if I can say that. And I like to try and say there's a positive message about dystopia and utopias, you know, being, you can still act now. You don't have to give up. You don't have to be the Lotus Eaters. And not the 1980s band, but the poem where you know, Tennyson's poem, where you retreat to an island and try and sit out what's coming. You know, you have to sort of take action. And, you know, you do have agency. You still have some agency, but it's up to you. So, yes, there is a bit of subtext to the piece. It's not just the surface aesthetic. In my work, it's a very long answer, but you asked for it. In my work, I try to draw attention with the surface aesthetic to what I would like people to consider as the, you know, the post-conceptual themes of all my work, which is all along this line of basically examining both the past and the future as, if you like, either phantom memory or something that you can change through your actions in the present. And obviously there's reverberations on economics, politics, climate. And the rise of the nostalgia movement was really my entry into this in 2016, thinking about how, you know, nostalgia had gone kind of so mainstream that it actually was starting to take over. And, you know, people were facing backwards instead of forwards. And so really that was, you know, my work is really about agency in the present. And I was asked once in an interview to reduce it to one word. And I said, well, it's the YOLOtopia, which is just obviously a complete joke. And but, you know, you try reducing 30 years of thinking about the nature of human existence into one word and see what you come up with. So, yeah, there's a lot there.
I wonder if it was because that moment you described of sitting mid-journey using creating images, and it was almost like a kind of, I was drawn at the time to kind of reflect on Coleridge's poem, Xanadu. Because that, I never understood.
The first half of it.
And I never understood, and then I realised it's a psychological poem, and it's actually talking about the levels of human consciousness in a way which is almost impossible to interpret. But it means that while we're presented with these images, externalised images that we're dealing with, actually the human consciousness, the Gnostic idea of as within, so without, as above, so below, actually it's a reciprocal process, and as we deal with images that change in the outside world, it changes on the inside for us, and we will manifest and produce images which actually, that's how it moves forward, if you like.
Yeah, no, I like that. I mean, no, you're obviously, everyone's affected by the things that you observe and, you know, the things that you're exposed to. And, this is, again, it's part of what I'm trying to say to people is it can feel really hopeless for a lot of people, you know, in the world we live in. But I, you know, try to don't stay in the past, think about going forward into the future, And it is that lotus eaters thing. It's really tempting to just, you know, financial nihilism is, you know, it's a generational threat. And I really want people to think about, you know, human activity in the present, in the, within their own lives, whether that's exposure to culture and how it changes your attitude, which is obviously, you know, it feels like a privileged thing to say, but I think it's a fantastic thing. And I think that, you know, I mean, there's some great Hakimbay's books on, you know, essays rather, on the temporary autonomous zone and the immediatism. That's the other one. I can't remember. Couldn't remember for a minute. You know, they're fantastic about how taking, you know, the doing of the work and the doing of the thing that make that kind of lights you up, whether in isolation, but even better as a communal action, will really basically give you something in your life that will, that you can almost kind of hang your personality on. But you know, the problem is that the struggle is so real for so many people. But still, art, culture, and I personally think that we should, you know, we have to lean into humanity as well as technology, which is my whole Prometheus kind of thing. You know, I really think that that is a way of. I don't know, I feel like distracting is the wrong word. It's kind of enhancing your modern life, which is just overcome with all these struggles that we have.
Where can anybody find out more information about you?
Yeah, I'm not very active on social media anymore. There's very good reasons for that. I should say centralized social media. You know, it seems like... Well, kind of talking of dystopias, kind of, and I've chosen to not prioritise it. The best place to go is to my website, which is zeitwarp.com, which is ZEITWARP.com. I run a monthly newsletter, which is updates people on exhibitions, where they are, long form reading, all that sort of thing. But that's really my focus now, is on my own platform. Is a horrible word for it. But, you know, I've been doing this a while. I have a decent audience of people. And, you know, I like to speak to them rather than have that mediated, which is a throwback to the Hakimbay thing again, by an external platform. And I appreciate it's 10 out of 10 for integrity and 0 out of 10 for commercial sense for the kind of modern artist or the modern, you know, anyone within culture. They seem like necessary evils, but it might be that they are just evils. And so, yes, socials, I'm not very active there. Passive, but not active.
No, unfortunately, I'm going to be here. Which is a shame. Ooh,
this
could be just
about right. So I'm Sean Clark. I'm a digital artist based here in Leicester. In fact, here in the LCB. I have a space upstairs. I'm involved in this event here called Computala, which is organised by New Media Art Club, as an artist and a teacher. So I'm doing a number of things over the next couple of weeks as part of the exhibition. I have my own piece of work, which is called Computational Constructs, which you might be able to hear twittering away in the background. And then I'm also teaching an Arts Award course, where we're going to be looking at the use of AI to control an artwork. And this is quite interesting because we're going to be using something called a microbit, very accessible piece of technology. And I'm going to be teaching 10, 14-year-olds how to make something with AI, which maybe you think isn't really possible, but it is.
Do you want to tell us a little bit about the exhibition and what the... Because it's the second year that it's run and what the flavour of it is?
Well, actually, I think maybe it's the second year with the title Computala, but it's the third year that Sean and Nush from New Media Art Club have organised an exhibition in this slot, January slot. And actually, prior to that, in the same gallery, but not in the same slot, I used to organise my Interact exhibitions here as well. So in its modern sense, we've probably had digital art exhibitions happening every year in Leicester for 10 years maybe. But of course, that's built on the history that Leicester has of doing digital art, which goes back 50 years.
So this year, what have you had a chance to look at things, and is there stuff that you looking specifically looking forward to seeing more of?
Well, this year is quite exciting for me, interesting for me, because I'm a contributor, not an organiser. So I get to focus on my piece, getting it looking how I want it to look. And I don't actually know all the other pieces in detail. So like everyone else who comes to the exhibition, I've got to make up my own mind about these pieces. Now, the theme I know is about robots and AI and how the world is changing around us and how artists maybe respond to that. Artists have a very important job in helping us make sense of what's happening in the world. So I am looking forward really to actually, I'm looking around now and I can see lots of interesting screens and things that I didn't realise had been set up and the way they're set up. So, you know, I literally am a viewer here. I'm an attendee apart from my own piece. And I'm liking the look of what I can see.
So tell us a bit about your piece then and what the background to it is.
Yeah. So for me, this piece is called Computational Constructs and it's part of a piece of work that I have been developing for quite a long time, even though I've only just called it Computational Constructs in the last year or so. And my interests are in how you can use, I guess in one way, how you can use simple rules to create things that look extremely complicated, and complex, in fact, the word I would prefer to use. So this piece, it's prints, it's a live running installation, and it's music, all generated by what I call systems that are built on simple rules. And what these simple rules do is they reorganize the systems. So when you look at a print, you can see all these little squares of colors, the little groups of colors. They haven't changed throughout the lifetime of the artwork. It's always reorganizing the same groups of colors, but it's got lots of groups of colors and lots of groups that interact with each other. So you end up with this really sort of complicated, some might think it looks random, but it's not, image that's made out of all these reorganized parts. And that's been my thing, really, my interest for quite a few years. I've now started to get some good focus on it. So this piece here is an opportunity for me to show the work and maybe get some feedback on it.
It sounds like an analogy for society in many ways, is that we constantly rework and reversion the same things.
Absolutely. You picked up on the underlying thing. So I'm interested in ecosystems. So the planet as an ecosystem, the universe as a system and whatever. And the thing about an ecosystem is that everything, it doesn't create new stuff. It reorganizes the stuff. So we're all made of atoms, and the atoms in us, the biological materials, molecules and so on, they've been reused in life since the beginning of life. In a very real sense, we're made out of dinosaurs, we're made out of other human beings, you know, Carl Sagan said we're made out of stardust. All these things are true. It's the same stuff that's constantly being reorganized and recycled and reused. Healthy ecosystems, in healthy ecosystems, that happens seamlessly. In damaged ecosystems, there are accumulation of things that can't be used by something else. So if you were to look at my work from that perspective, an ecological perspective, hopefully it's reminding you that it's important that everything has a use. And what we are doing as human beings is we're often creating materials that have no use, and we call them toxins, and they build up in the ecosystem and they're damaging the ecosystem and they're preventing it from achieving its full potential.
And I suppose the aim is, from our perspective, is being part of a dynamic system rather than an inert system.
Yeah.
So what is the what's the catalyst, if you like, that pushes and keeps that change happening that we should, that you've discovered in your work?
So I actually, because I've done research, I'm a researcher as well as an artist, of what I would call a practice-based researcher, and my practice is making art. I've looked at some of the theories that very smart people have come up with over the last 100 years or whatever, and I'm very interested in a theory called the theory of autopoiesis. And the theory of autopoiesis, it's a made-up word, but based on two Greek terms, self-creation. And there's a property that living things have, which is they create themselves. They don't, well, I suppose some people might think, but they don't have a creator. They create themselves by having a process, and that process takes all the stuff from the environment, makes a pattern, and gets rid of the stuff that doesn't fit the pattern. And I think that is actually, and with the theory of autopoiesis by some guys called Maturana and Varela, they said, well, actually, we developed this theory for biology, but it can be applied to all other forms of pattern. So it can be applied to simple systems, living systems, complex systems, societies, like you were saying, buildings, in fact, everything. Every time you look at anything that's complicated and complex, you can actually try to understand it from a systems perspective. And that then makes you think, well, actually, if this is going to survive, it has to be able to reuse stuff, and it has to be able to maintain this dynamic, like you were saying. It mustn't just get stuck and not be able to continue evolving and developing. That's bad. Those sorts of systems don't survive. They collapse and whatever. So the thing is, there's all this deeper philosophical stuff that I'm interested in chatting about. But at the end of the day, I want people to look at it and think it's interesting, or at least have a response in me. They'll think it's not interesting. And then if they want to, they can dig deeper and maybe they'll come across some of the ideas that I'm working with. But in some sense, it should just be immediate and interesting and something that you might think, well, that's worth looking at.
Because I suppose the takeaway from it is to say that we need to think carefully about the motivating forces. For you, what do you, you know, I mean, you're the motivator of your work. You're the god of your work. Yeah. You're the progenitor of that. What's your motivation and what can, how does that fit with other models of motivation that you've come against?
My motivation, actually, I have thought about this. You're asking a good question there. Why am I creating work? Well, actually, I'm creating my work to help me understand some of these concepts, which sometimes can be quite difficult. And I realised that for the last 30 years, since I've been making artwork, really the primary motivation has been an exploration of some of these ideas, systems ideas. And if I can show the work and other people can have a bit of insight into that and we can have interesting conversation, then I've achieved something. So as an artist, my motivation isn't, in fact, isn't to make things that just sell. No one's going to be against selling some stuff if people are interested, but it's not my motivation. My motivation is a journey in which I can try to understand some of these complex ideas of how the world works around me. So it's quite a personal motivation, but I'm always happy when people get on the same sort of wavelength and we have a good conversation about what's going on and they get it as well.
Yeah, we can be philosophical about these things. It's initially strikes me as being different from art in the age of mechanical reproduction, where, you know, you're just endlessly turning out versions of something. But this is generative. Yeah. And that applies so much that this is where our AI issues are in place at the moment.
So it's interesting. Construction is an interesting word because it's used in lots of fields. It's used in art, constructivism, as a way of talking about a particular way of making and presenting artwork and interpreting artwork, where the construction of the work is part of the work and is visible. And it's a constructed, you accept that your artwork has been constructed and you're involved in that process of construction. But I actually use a term, I haven't finalized it yet, but I'm thinking it's going to be called reconstructivism, because my artworks never finish. They never finish constructing. Okay, the prints, you might say, well, they clearly aren't going to change, but the prints are just a window into this world. The artwork is an ever-changing thing that's always reconstructing itself. So that, for me, reconstructivism, this concept that nothing is static and everything is changing, and even a snapshot is just a snapshot. It's not the beginning and it's not the end, it's just that moment in time. So the piece we have here, actually, the reason I see it as three little bits. So there are some prints, which clearly are not constantly changing, because they're prints. I like prints. There's the computer-based piece, which is constantly changing, but it's constantly changing within a whole bunch of rules, so that you come back in a week's time, or at the end of the exhibition, nothing about this artwork will be exactly the same. It might be, not intentionally, but it might be. But it will look similar. It's not going to radically change. It's not going to turn from spirals and squares and this, that, and the other into pictures of elephants. I know that for a fact, but it will not be the same as it is now. And then I'm interested in talking to people about these ideas. So I've set up some panels that introduce what I'm thinking about. And at the same time, I'm introducing AI into this, because I personally have started using AI more in how I make my work. But I want to use it in a very specific way. I'm in charge. I use AI to help me do things that it can do faster, but I don't use it to come up with fresh ideas. So I have some text which is introducing that, because I'm starting to realise that my work has to respond to changing world around us, and that part of the world, you know, that element of society in the world is changing. And of course the whole exhibition, AI and robots and so on, it ties in with that theme. So we can talk forever about AI, because I have a lot of opinions about it, but I think the best way to maybe have, well, just formulate your own opinions, but this exhibition as a whole, I think, might help you form your own opinions.
Yeah, I don't think in the present model that we've got, AI is ever going to give us deep intuitions or revelations. That's a very human experience, and yeah, it's not for the thing. Just a kind of a thought, really, was about this. I call it what you're describing in a way. For me, it's emergence, and there's the metamodern adage, which is after the deconstruction must come the reconstruction, and we've lived through a period of deconstruction where we've taken everything apart and looked at its constituent components and you know, reconstructed, you know, reworked it in that kind of postmodern sense as a kind of pastiche often as well. But now we're looking back at that process again and trying to figure out what that that reconstruction actually means for that.
Absolutely, yeah. So when art starts to talk about postmodernism, sometimes it can get a little bit up itself, let's say. But if postmodernism is this idea that now everything is available to us and everything can exist simultaneously and there's no current thing, it's like all the recycled things from the past put together in new ways, whatever, so it might be the essence of postmodernism. I would agree that we're now in this post-postmodernism phase where it actually, this constant process of reconstruction, it's where we are now. So I would call it a reconstructivism. And that term has been used elsewhere in political theory and so on, but then there's nothing wrong with reusing a word. And for me, as an artist, and it's an idea that I have been developing for a long time, but on the other hand, I don't believe any idea is brand new. Other people have developed it as well. And even if I haven't been aware of their influence, I've been influenced by them. For me, this idea, this sort of mini revelation that the artwork is never finished, the artwork is always reconstructing itself. Maybe you can communicate that to a viewer and they can have a little bit of interest in the reconstruction. Also, I see this as an endless body of work. Well, it won't be endless. I've got 8 cycles of the work in my head. I don't know what anything beyond the next cycle are going to look like, but I'll keep revisiting and reconstructing the themes. One thing I'm pretty sure about is that the underlying elements that the artwork is made of, which actually is 4,096 values, which can be interpreted as colours or sounds. Those underlying things, there's some interesting sound going on here at the moment. Those underlying things will always be present. So if you look at the next version and the version after, and then this version 8, which who knows what it's going to be like with the rate of technological change, one thing that will hold them together is the same stuff is inside every artwork. And that, to me, a reconstruction. I'm reorganising and reproducing and representing, reconstructing the work. So, which is why it's nice to have an opportunity to present this phase here, and hopefully as part of an exhibition where there are lots of other interesting thoughts being presented. Maybe some of the people who see this might be able to make the connections with the next piece and the next piece and so on.
What are you looking forward to seeing over the next couple of weeks?
So I think what a New Media Art Club have put together is an interesting programme. So I think you'll get the most out of it by engaging with the programme. So come to the exhibition and do what I'm about to do, which is to walk around and make your own mind up about what the connections are. If you can, enter into a dialogue with some of the artists. I think a lot of them are on Instagram and they'll certainly be available. So don't treat it as like something that you look at it and that's the end. Interact with people. And then some of the events that are happening, there have been workshops, there's a boot camp. And then at the end of the month, as part of last Friday, there's an event, whereas I think Leonie de Barriguer is organising it as part of her ceremony series, where there will be performances, I think, based on what's happening in the month. And I'm giving a performance of the artwork. So the artwork and the performance becomes an instrument. And I now play the artwork live in a way that I'm not completely sure about yet. I need to work on that. But it will be a performance of the artwork. And again, that is a great opportunity to be part of an event where I can do that. So I think for me, what I'm looking forward to, feedback on my own work, looking at the other work, thinking about the ideas that people are coming up with, having some good conversations, talking to people, and then having this performance at the end and then thinking about it as a programme. And of course, the workshops. As I'm doing some workshopping, I'm looking forward to tomorrow doing this little mini AI workshop as part of the second Saturday. And then we have our Arts Award, which there's still places for, so if people should contact us and maybe get involved. This is for younger people to do a more formal investigation of this tech and have some fun. And then there are other things happening. Yeah, it's going to be a good month.
Hi, I'm Florencia, or Flor del Fuego. That's my artistic name. I'm from Argentina, but I'm raised in Germany. Yes, we are here with Naoto as part of the exhibition, and we were in 2 days helping artists with a project. Maybe Naoto now will explain a bit more about it.
Yeah, so I'm Naoto. I'm originally from Japan, based in Estonia. Right now, I'm doing research. And in my artistic practice, I do a lot of live coding, which is a practice to create images, sound, on the spot, instead of using like moving sliders or dropping images on the software. But we create from the scratch. We write programming code on the editor. And together with Flor, we have been working together for 5-6 years, and we embrace the idea of community driven open source and making it possible for others, doing it together. So this bootcamp, 2 days, we had three other artists working together with us, Sean, Jash, and Shun. And basically this captures the philosophy of live coding and open source. So we gave tutorial from, so three of them, most of them didn't know Hydra live coding when they arrived. So we started from tutorials and we started from basics. And in the exhibition, what you will see is not a performance, it's not live coding performance, but you will see visuals, a lot of colors and glitches that are created during these two-day boot camp, and we put them together as an interactive installation where you can explore these sketches we created.
And have you done work like this before, and how did you come to get into this line of doing things?
So we work a lot with Hydra, that is this visual environment software, and we did once an online workshop where we were, it was kind of a proof of concept, really, because it's not actually so much research or developed. So we were using another library that is a machine learning program for training. It's called Teachable Machine. So we were training data sets of, for example, for this case, images. And these images, the system can recognize an image, and this can, for example, evaluate and change the visuals that are in Hydra. So basically, what we wanted was to develop this scene, that is this book with images and questions that we were thinking during these 2 days with the artist. And the scene responds also to the visuals, and the visuals responds to the scene, because there's this kind of dialogue. There's also this camera that is pointing to the scene. So what you see is also what is changing, and what you change is what you see.
From a participant point of view, somebody taking part in this process, what do you think they get out of that?
As a visitor, you will see moving image projected on the wall, and there is a zine that just Flor explained. You can not scroll, flip pages, and there will be like different visuals that are created with Hydra, and also you will see that the image on the screen reacts to your page flipping. Also, we invite visitors to write. We have a pen, and you can write your answers to the questions that are written on the page. And the idea is to make it not just a visitor changing something, like affecting the system, but also you will see other visitors' response to the question. The questions are mostly related to the topic or the title of the exhibition, Robots for a Safer World. And we have, I think, 6 or 7 questions in separate pages that you will see other people's, visitors' response, and you can add your response as well to reflect on this question. And also, like, for us, it's very exciting to see at the end of the exhibition, we will have a collection of responses, and we're not planning to train machine learning or anything with this. But this collective knowledge, collectively, like, how can we reflect on it? Is it something like a ritual? Is it something, yeah, like how, like, different ways of thinking, provoking these questions, that's something we're interested.
Do you find that you're getting different responses when you do this in different places?
Well, this is our first time, so with this kind of installation and with this kind of question, so it's something new. So I think the results we will see after or during the exhibition.
So it almost feels like it's like a live piece of action research in a way, combining that with a purely aesthetic appreciation. How do you see the interplay between the two working out?
Yeah, that's a great question, because we haven't really mentioned, but we didn't have any concrete idea when we started this 2-day bootcamp. So every one of us had some kind of idea that we want to pursue, or we come with different practices. So we started with brainstorming and imagine what would be the outcome after 2 days. So one of the things is, well, the tools we offered are Hydra and Teachable Machine, so this generating visuals and training machine learning to recognize images. But the idea of, for example, working with printed material, like a zine, and also working with the text, that are the questions or prompts that we added to the zine, these things came from the participating artists and us. So it's experimental in itself. I would say, we just do it, we just learn by doing. And also, we try to keep it simple so that you don't need to, as a visitor, you don't need to press this button and that button, but it's just basically analog interface of the booklet, and you can just flip, write, very basic interactions. And let's see what will come out.
Where can people find out more information about this?
Probably in the scene. And perhaps at the New Media Club webpage as well. Yeah.
There is a big QR code at the back of the zine, so you can scan it and you will land to the webpage where we have information about every artist participating, and also some. You can also print the PDF from that page and you can make your own zine. And the whole system is made on as a webpage, so you can open the same program on your desktop or laptop computer and try it at home as well.
I just want to say to everyone, thank you so much for coming to the opening tonight. The weather's obviously terrible. And
okay. I'm Sean Carroll. I'm one of the 2 curators of the Robots for a Safer World exhibition that's happening at LCB throughout January. Robots for a Safer World originally was a government challenge for industry to find ways to automate the messy, uncomfortable and difficult parts of manual labour. With the rise of generative, specifically AI, and what it means for artists, we wanted to put together an exhibition that kind of examines that from the perspective of artists. What does it mean to be able to automate the messy and the difficult parts of the work that we make and the practice? And what does it mean to have an assistant that can help us through all the difficult parts? You know, is it exciting for an artist? Is it empowering? Or does it take away some of the things that makes the work special? We don't have an opinion on that in this exhibition, but what we did want to do was put that out for a prompt, if you like, and see how artists responded to it. And it was really nice to see lots of very different work come back, you know. So we've got work that is we've got work that's cyber pets. There's some really interesting AI-assisted puzzle games. But there's a beautiful video about a large language model that starts to write love letters and always gives up at the end because it realizes that it doesn't have anyone. There's a fantastic monologue in the exhibition. It's not a monologue. There's a fantastic dialogue in the exhibition by an artist who has created an AI from a huge archive of late father's writing and radio recordings, and has created an AI and is having, I guess, the first conversation with him since he's passed away. And it's very difficult to listen to, but it's important. And whether that's what that means to people is quite different things. People respond to that work particularly in very different ways. But it's an important conversation to have at this moment with AI, thinking about what it means for us and what the next couple of years are going to mean for culture and society. So we're very excited with the way that people have responded to it. And we're just very pleased with what's happening.
And what activities have you got coming up?
Yeah, so there's quite a bit happening at LCB over the month as part of it. Tomorrow we're having a kids' launch, if you like, a kids' day at the CQ Earlies. So we're going to be opening most of the exhibition for young people to have a look at and respond to and think about. There's going to be some kids' workshops looking at BBC Microbit and some really simple machine learning algorithms that they can use to turn Microbit into things like magic wands or play catch with it. We also have some performances over the exhibition. So we have a workshop/performance with an artist called Mark Towers, where we'll be building a robot in the gallery that's going to be playing music for the rest of the exhibition. And we have a really exciting set of performances for our closing party with a local group called Ceremony, who are doing a night called Slop for us, where they've invited several artists to think about human-computer interaction in the way that they perform, how they could perform alongside computers or algorithms in different ways. And we're really excited also to see what they come back with.
And where can people find out more information?
Yeah, all the information is at computala.info or at newmediaart.club, or we're all over the Instagram and the LCB's social media as well. Have been really supportive, so you should be able to find us.
Tell us who you are and what you're doing here tonight.
My name's Savannah Irving and I'm an artist based in Leicester, and I have my work exhibited at the Computala exhibition.
Which one's yours?
Mine is the pink framed print towards the right, and then also the digital paper print as well.
And what drew you to exhibiting to this?
I think it's kind of been hard to like maybe access spaces that are more focused around like new emerging media and like conversations around technology and AI and stuff like that. And that's kind of the direction that my practice is going in. And I've kind of always been fascinated around these like types of themes. And so it's nice to come to a space where there's people that have similar ideas to you and you can exhibit work and sort of meet new people. Yeah.
What are the kind of themes that you try and explore in your work?
Yeah, I mean, my most recent series of works is kind of based on natural forms and starting with like still life photography of natural forms, and then taking it through like a very drawn out process of sort of like using different digital softwares such as Blender and like wrapping objects in my images and kind of like deconstructing them. And I sort of found that like the images that I was creating kind of had like a AI uncanny like feel to them that I thought was quite interesting. And I'm kind of interested in like the way that kind of AI sort of meshes different images together through different reference points. And I thought that it's pretty ironic that I'm doing that as an artist with my own sort of archive of images. So, yeah.
What's that uncanniness? Explain what that is.
I don't know. It's like it feels real, but it's also not real. Like it's something that feels familiar, but isn't. There's something that's always slightly off with it. And I think with my process and like the images that I'm creating, there's a sense of like hyperrealism, but there's always something that's kind of surreal towards it. Yeah.
So what do you hope that when somebody's kind of viewing that in the context of the exhibition that they maybe take away from it?
I think, I guess with my work, I kind of like to push the boundaries of like the software that I'm using. And I think within this whole project, there's kind of been like this yearning to connect with nature, even though I live in the city. And like this collection of images that I've kind of taken and distorted has kind of been a way of maybe like reconnecting with nature in a sense, even though they're kind of two juxtaposing themes. I feel like they can exist in the same realm, and I feel like that's quite exciting. So
it's kind of, we've gone very far, you know, we've gone headfirst into technology, and we've that the opposite swing is to go back into nature, maybe.
Yeah, I think so. I think there's definitely a big urge for people to kind of go back into nature and explore the sublime, and sort of the effects and the senses and the shapes and forms found in nature. They're incredibly powerful. And I think that people maybe think that our like move towards technology is kind of taking away from that. But I think that like the two can kind of coexist. I think there can be balance between both, which is kind of what I'm trying to do in my practice, I guess. So, yeah.
And where can people find your work?
You can find my work on Instagram at bipp.mp4. Yeah.
That's a memorable handle. Great.
Yeah. But yeah, that's where you can find me mostly. And I think I've got my website linked in my bio on there as well. So, yeah. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Antonio Roberts, and I'm an artist based in Birmingham, and I'm here today to see the Computala exhibition.
And are you exhibiting?
No, I'm not exhibiting, but I am taking part in the performance, the closing performances, the slop, I think it's called, at the end of the month.
And so what's your take on what the exhibition's about?
I really like that it's... my take on the exhibition... At first, I was a bit apprehensive because I'm not a fan of AI, but I like, with its interpretation of AI, it isn't necessarily, I guess, like boosterism. It isn't just blind acceptance. There's some conceptual thinking around it, some critical, and yeah, I like everyone's interpretation of what AI is and how it can be used.
Any of it leave you confused?
Sorry?
Any of it leave you confused? I think everybody who asks the question is like kind of, usually it's like, what do you understand from it? And I think actually ask the question about confusion is always good.
Yeah, I wouldn't say it leaves me confused because being an artist who's involved with tech, I've seen a lot of AI stuff, but it more is like clarifying as to how artists are actually using it, because, you know, the idea of AI being able to generate anything that you want, but it's like, well, okay, as a creative person, how do you want to use it? And so this is just giving me some clarity on, like, you know, how people are thinking about it, really. So, yeah, more clarity it's given me, actually.
That process of clarification usually involves kind of burning things away, dissolving things. In your own work, what do you, you know, is the stuff that you take that you kind of think that, well, actually, we can get rid of this, we can dissolve it and not use it anymore?
Oh, that'll just be computers overall, to be honest. I think as much as I use technology, I hate it for most of the time. But no, yeah, I think, again, it's just it's kind of questioning the values of technology. And I think that's one thing I've seen just generally, especially with artists using technology, they're being more critical of, like, what is it I'm using, how does it affect the world I'm in and the world around me. So yeah, and for that reason, I see a bit more rejection of new things, not just blindly accepting new equals better. There is critical thinking behind it.
Haven't seen a number of different of the exhibits. Mm-hmm. Is there anything in there that you can say? Oh, you know, usually, you say I'll steal that or I'll borrow that. But it's what would inspire you?
Well, I'm a bit biased because I like the software Hydra, but definitely I like the Hydra visuals stuff because it's using machine learning to kind of like identify patterns within visuals and then respond to that. So yeah, I can see myself using some of those concepts in my own work, or like, you know, taking something away from that. But yeah, that would be the main one, I think.
And do you want to let people know where you can find your work?
Yeah, sure. So my name is Antonio Roberts, and I can be found online under the username HelloCatFood. No one else has got that username, so if you'd search it, you'd find me, trust me.